7:20 on a Wednesday morning. Last night, the Northfield City Council held a work session at City Hall Council Chambers. And to discuss that with us is Northfield City Administrator Ben Martin. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Jeff.
Work session last night. Let's go through the agenda and see what you talked about. It was you had a preliminary review of some alternative options for ward and precincts. Of course, we've got we have the census results in, and redistricting has taken place. What did the council talk about last night as far as the wards and precincts in Northfield?
Yeah, continuation of our discussion that we had, that we've got some deadlines coming up by the end of the month that we have to make some decisions related to our ward and precinct determinations for this upcoming election following the census. And the council had recommended basically no changes. We did, staff did bring in one precinct change for a voting location for Northfield Retirement Center to Emmaus Church, which they're, all directions are heading that way. And we actually held the election there the last time. And because of unknown COVID restrictions, we're still looking at having it there versus the retirement center. So I think that's the easy one. We did have some listening sessions, though, open house and presentation to hear from the public, which today is actually the last day for taking input formally from our process. But based on that open house, we did hear from some Carleton College officials requesting for a modification of the ward boundary, where along 2nd Street, we have a ward boundary of the 1st Ward and the 4th Ward. And they're looking at between 2nd and 4th Street, expanding 2 blocks in that direction towards 4th. And then also from Winona Street to Washington Street, they're looking at basically a 6-city block area to be added in. So it was all in one ward for their students, even though it's outside of kind of what we designate as the college area. Obviously, they own a number of properties between the White Center, where they have some student and faculty housing. And they were basically saying for their community, it would be helpful to make education related to elections a little easier if that would pretty much encapsulate all of any of the housing that they have with that. So that was a request. Now, we have to follow certain laws about variance of population and things, and that still stays within our variation if we were to add those blocks in from one block to the or from one ward to the other. And it is contiguous and compact to a degree. It does kind of shift a little bit from a major roadway on 2nd Street down, so there's a little bit of a jet there. We did also take a look from a staffing standpoint, like, okay, how might these change in the future? The 4th Ward's probably the least likely to change in the next decade, so we're also kind of looking forward, saying, how might variations happen in the future? So this would take away potentially a few blocks, depending on what happens with population. Again, hard to predict 10 years from now, but or 8 years from now, I guess, on the next census. But with that in mind, we got feedback from the council. We thought that it was reasonable for them probably to go either way with that. But they had provided guidance on the first option just to stay with how we've had things. And in the end, there was a majority consensus, I think, to just stay the course. We would have had to have done an ordinance versus a resolution, and that's a two-step process. So we probably would have had some expedited approval process as we would have to have done. But I think the feedback that we got was to stay with what was proposed based on that particular request last night. Not formally voted on, but it was a work session.
All right.
That was the feedback we got, though.
So on the, as far as the other changes to the wards and precincts, really just minor stuff?
Really nothing. No changes other than that one voting location changing, the precinct changing to Emmaus, which actually was the same as last election. So it appears that we're heading for a vote next month, our next meeting on Tuesday for this.
All right. Ben Martin is our guest, Northfield City Administrator. A week ago, you had a work session on the 1st and talked quite a bit about flood mitigation within the residential areas. You continued on with that discussion, only moved it downtown. Downtown flood study was discussed. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so the purpose of this study was to reduce the flooding in the downtown area for structures in parks, and then also we've seen major flood events over the past 15 years that has really caused expensive flood fights and recovery efforts. And so we got a grant from the federal government that we are in the middle of for a feasibility study to look at alternative options to help respond to these types of things as we see these changing weather patterns and additional rainfall and flooding levels. And then as we go through this, we're going to look at additional hydraulic analysis of the river and modeling on we're using new storm modeling data or have been looking at that with the residential. We're also looking at that information with this river corridor as well, and we're probably going to do some additional modeling with that. The watershed's a 925-mile watershed area we're dealing with. So we go all the way over to Waterville,
Blooming Prairie?
Prairie.
Okay. Yeah.
And then down to Owatonna as well. So again, we're seeing more intense storms. 2010 was our highest flood of record, and 2016 was really close to that. So over, you know, the past few decades, we're really seeing more serious rain goals. So our goal with the study is reducing damage from this, being more prepared to combat these. So like, can we, you know, might have to do upgrades to flood walls and those kinds of things versus sandbags and temporary barriers. How do we also meet some of our riverfront plan goals that we have related to? Can we also improve recreation along the way with some of that and the use of the river and access? And then also just we have historic structures that are federally designated as significant structures within that area as well. And so it's also how might we protect those historic buildings also that are important. So what are the options? As examples, I gave one of them. We got flood walls. We could expand some flood walls, potentially raise some of those. There's dry flood proofing. So there are things like if you are going to stay in the space and you know that coming up to the building, there can be some flooding. You can do treatments to the foundations. And then also where you have door openings or window openings, you can have temporary kind of designed attachments to keep the water out to make it quicker and easier to deal with the flooding. There's wet flood proofing where that's designed to let the water actually come into the lower levels, and it basically preserves the structure. But you know, if you have equipment and things, you got to raise electrical and be prepared with that, or just looking at also temporary barriers with that. So those were a number of alternatives we took a look at kind of through the river corridor itself.
City Administrator Martin is with us. You know, there is a lot of the damage, thinking back to the 2010 flood, which is the worst one. We had much damage, thinking in particular Froggy Bottoms. The water table just rising up through the floor of it and, you know, popping the tiles and all of a sudden like flooding from the bottom up. Anything that, it doesn't seem like there'd be a whole lot you could do in a situation like that. Was that taken into account?
Well, yeah, internally to the system, they've done some things like raising their electrical up. Mm-hmm. So again, those like might be dry flood proofing strategies or maybe even wet to a certain degree, knowing you might have some water come in.
Yeah.
The city certainly participated on helping related to some property we had owned to extend the flood wall and then create some flood gates. So flood gates are a thing too that can be used. That side of the river actually where the flood wall ends, one of the options and recommendations looked at would be to do a flood wall extension. Going all the way down to the 2nd Street Bridge, basically, with that. So that would range from about $1.3 to $2.6 million to have a flood wall extension. That would be the back part of the flood wall. We did look at alternatives of just raising the main flood wall, but number one, it would go up a lot higher, so you would have no view of the river unless you were to raise also the walking kind of level of that, which causes a lot of issues as well, so they're mainly looking that area as a solution to have a secondary flood wall is an option. Mm-hmm. The other areas, Jeff, across the river that we looked at, the Carlson Capital Management Building has experienced on that lower level in particular. They did sandbagging, I think, on both of those events to help protect. So, again, mm-hmm. that's a kind of a dry protection, dry flood proofing solution, temporary. And then there's some more permanent options they could do on that building related to the treatment of the walls and then also installing kind of like a gate, but something that attaches to the where there are openings, that it's a more firm attachment to make it a little easier. That's somewhere between $400,000 and $800,000 estimated cost, versus there really aren't good options on that one related to the flood wall improvements. Mm-hmm. You could maybe do some wet flood proofing where they just vacate that lower level and then plan for that to happen, but that takes away some usable space. And then the last area of private property we were looking at is the flood predictions actually show higher water levels than we've actually observed further south over by the food co-op building and then the River Mall area. And so even though the predictive modeling shows that it should have actually come up higher than it did, we didn't observe that at either of those major events in 2010 and 2016. Those are the least cost where it comes up pretty close to the buildings, but with our estimates, dry flood proofing is probably necessary on a couple of those areas, probably in the $150,000 to $300,000 range. So those are kind of the options. There is the ability to put a flood wall in there as well. It's quite a bit more expensive, but that could be an option to take a look at. And some of these things, too, is you can be prepared that if you as we do further modeling on what we might see in the future, might become more of a reality, or if over time on certain areas where you're not completely sure, you might be prepared to move in that direction if you see some of the changing happening with that. But we also took a look at some of the parks as kind of the last piece where, you know, like Ames Park, Babcock Park, Riverside Lions Park, where we've had some flooding during those events. And you could do fill in the flood fringe area, so not real close to the river, but the secondary area. You are allowed to fill those areas. So that's an option that was looked at. It can be pretty expensive to bring in dirt and fill and all of that, too. And you got to also be careful not to fill the entire areas, because if everybody does it, then it becomes a bit of a problem. But in these cases, on the grand scheme of our watershed, filling those areas are pretty minor. So it really won't have downstream impacts if we were to do that. But one option is as we plan the parks out, if you put structures in, as an example, considering at least having those elevated so that they're protected during rain events. If you see flooding videos, sometimes you might see out in the middle of a park, there might be like a park shelter or something, and it's like an island all on its own. Well, that's intentional when you see some cities that do that, because they might allow the flood areas all around it to go there, but to protect the structure, they'll raise just around the structures for those. So those are strategies that they're evaluating with this as well.
All right. Let's move on. The introduction of a proposed Heritage Loft Apartments, and they also have a TIF request in. First of all, Heritage Loft Apartments, what is that proposal?
Yeah, back behind Target on Heritage Drive, the owner of the Mosaic Apartment Complex also owns a kind of a large remaining 14-plus acreage area that they're looking at developing some additional apartment complexes with that. So it's a little under 3-acre site that they're looking at to do the development. And the proposal includes an apartment building of 90 units. There'd be 6 3-bedroom units, 37 2-bedroom units, and 38 1-bedroom units, and 9 studio units for that. It's a 3-story apartment complex on the site. Underground parking would be included on that, some surface parking as well. There's a number of amenities with it, kind of workout rooms, some doggy facilities, rooftop patio, some grilling areas, a conference space for them, and kind of a fitness center type of an area related to it. It's a $22 million project. They are looking at adding or including that an affordability component, that of those units, 20% would be at 50% average median income or lower for affordability. And that makes them eligible to apply for our tax increment financing assistance to guarantee for the life of the TIF district, which could be upwards of 26 years, to utilize the new tax value to help subsidize the units to include some affordability. They'd be applying the units basically across all of the different types of units, so equally distributed amongst the studio, the 1, 2, and 3-bedroom units for the affordability component. And they have to prove annual reporting on that as well. So we got an initial look at the site. They actually have site plan review far underway currently with this project. And the council got an initial early look at the kind of the drawings and project scoping for some initial feedback. It's going to be making its rounds here over the next couple months to our Planning Commission, Housing and Redevelopment Authority, to review the TIF process that we go through to consider some assistance for the project.
Boy, $22 million, that's a good-sized project.
Yeah, and the prices keep going up, so these are probably at it right now, you know, making adjustments based on current market conditions. And, you know, it's about it's just over $240,000 a unit that this costs. So, I mean, housing's pretty expensive, and that's for an apartment unit. That's what you're looking at for a upfront cost for that, for all of those per unit. And so it's a major investment. Certainly, there's a lot of amenities around that area. You got shopping, you got grocery, you got a YMCA, you know, schools are within a short biking distance. You could probably walk to some of those, and it will help those businesses out, I think, to have that additional housing. And our housing study certainly showed there's a need for this. So it's a good site. It sat vacant for quite a while, from some early planning that went south a couple decades ago, but good to see a project coming forward again.
Yeah. All right. One more item on the agenda last night. Proposed ordinance amendments related to the residential rental licensing code and also nuisance code. Did something in particular trigger this one, or what? Why are you looking at that?
Yeah, so I would say we found out, you know, I started in 2016, and I think there have probably even been some challenges before then, that our rental codes really has a goal to ensure that we have quality housing, that we have clear standards and procedures. And as part of that, just to make sure we have a good housing stock and have a good standard for people to live in. And I think we found over time that our code was not working well to achieve those goals, and really needed to have some pretty significant updates to that. So we were looking at kind of shortening some of the sections, add them in different areas, make them more clear. We've done some modifications to get into three licensing types, that if you're generally good on your inspection, you fall into what we currently have, a 3-year kind of review period, unless we get complaints. But then if you're kind of going to a tier two, where we got a number of issues, we have an action plan with it. And then if you're in a tier three, that'd be a 2-year review. Then we do a check back at a shorter period of time. And if we have significant problems, you go on a 1-year review and have a mitigation plan that's kind of ongoing that we monitor. We have new enforcement mechanisms, more clarity as it relates to life safety issues. So I would say not super exciting policy things, I guess, from a code standpoint, but a major undertaking that I think's taken, I think it might have been up to 2 years that we've been working on this. It kind of started with a consulting study, determining scope. We've had listening meetings from landlords and tenants, getting feedback on kind of upfront and then on the back end with the drafts that we've had going forward. So we've got one more review with the Housing Redevelopment Authority, and then coming back to the City Council next week for presentation, or for an introduction of the ordinance with that as well. So it's just a major overhaul, I would say, of kind of just foundational things on a rental licensing program. And again, to your initial question, Jeff, we just found that the tools weren't really effective for us to ensure kind of those basic health and safety improvements to really effectively deal with them.
Mm-hmm. All right. We're out of time, Ben. Thank you so much for coming in. Much appreciated. And we'll talk to you once again next week.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, Jeff.
Ben Martin, Northfield City Administrator. You're listening to 95.1 FM and AM 1080 KYMN Northfield. Rich is with local news in 1 minute.
This news update is brought to you by Great Rivers Mutual Insurance Company, where you can get the coverage you need from the people you know.
At Great Rivers Mutual, you get the coverage you need from the people you know. And we will be there for you when you need us most, because at Great Rivers Mutual, we grow trust locally. With 18 agencies and over 100 agents across Minnesota, including Northfield, Kenyon, Wanamingo, Goodhue, and Lakeville areas, our agents provide friendly, personalized service and know how to build a customized insurance package to fit your needs. For big company amenities with a small town feel, visit greatriversmutual.com to find an agent near you.
Minnesota